Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
What up? Welcome in. This is The Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be making this part of your day. Thanks so much. I'm Doug Gottlieb in for Colin Cowherd. Don't worry, haters. Colin will be back tomorrow. Hope you had a great weekend. Team USA wins the gold in men's and women's basketball, to be expected. I actually had knee surgery on Friday before it, and I fell asleep, you know, when I got whatever I got from the anesthesiologist watching rhythmic gymnastics. And, you know, like rhythmic gymnastics is like, really? They're running around with a ribbon. And then you watch it, you're like, oh, that's kind of hard. It's kind of hard. Between watching rhythmic gymnastics, watching our first NFL preseason game, how about that? We had preseason football. Steelers took down the Cowboys, who continue to rest Dak Prescott 16-3. We had a Hall of Fame induction ceremony where we had two classes inducted at once. We had a lot. We had a lot. Maybe the most interesting storyline in the NFL. I don't see Deshaun Watson being traded. How do you sell your franchise on or your fans on? Hey, we're bringing in a guy who's got these pending lawsuits against him. Houston can't play him. He doesn't want to play for Houston. It's a marriage that's going to end in a divorce. It's just the timing isn't right now. So, you know, look, there's a lot of different quarterback storylines, which are interesting. I think the Jimmy Garoppolo one, okay, is maybe the most interesting because it's true. Jimmy Garoppolo did not make the plays in the Super Bowl that could have closed the deal, could have won them the game. And there's just no way in which you can convince me that throwing 8 passes in the NFC Championship game signified that they had a tremendous amount of confidence in Garoppolo. Look at how they were playing even at the end of the first half in the Super Bowl. So, yes, he was able to get them to a Super Bowl. Yes, he was able to help them see sustained success, which they hadn't seen really since Alex Smith was there. You know, they had success with Colin Kaepernick, but Kaepernick, if you look back, he took over one season, the next season was really good, and then he kind of plateaued and even and really kind of fell off after that. And then the team had to be retooled. Garoppolo's given them some consistent success when he's played. They've been a playoff team. Even go back to his first year, remember, when he went on that run, he got traded by New England. They weren't going to play him. Then they played him. They started winning games and surprised even themselves. This was Kyle Shanahan talking about his quarterbacks. It's both of them. That's why we keep repping it. I mean, it's a hard thing about it. That's why when you just dabble in that stuff, you're going to get turnovers. Right? He goes on to say that Garoppolo, okay, Garoppolo looks sharp. Garoppolo is playing the best football of his life. But the reality to it is, you know, you move mountains to go and get your quarterback and you trade and get Trey Lance. Now, if you want to say, hey, Garoppolo is going to have a longer leash than other people in his position because Trey Lance only played one football game last year and wasn't playing at a super high level, like, that's fair. It's fair. But Lance started fast over the weekend and Jimmy Garoppolo kind of caught him. I do think that Jimmy Garoppolo should have the leg up because he does know the system like the back of his hands. He has seen live bullets. He's seen the livest of bullets in the Super Bowl. But I, you know, it's like, it's really, you can't believe a word any of these guys say. Do I believe he's playing the best football of his life? Okay, sure. Is he motivated by it? Sure. Is he their long-term quarterback? Of course not. You don't draft a guy that high. You don't move mountains that much unless you're ultimately going to make him your starting quarterback. You don't just suddenly have an epiphany one day driving work. You know, Jimmy is good enough. Let's just stick with Jimmy. Let's figure out how to do it, how to have them both. Like, that's not going to happen. And the question is, did they do the Sam Bradford? Or did they do the Alex Smith? The Sam Bradford is, Eagles obviously signed him, brought him back. Then they went and drafted Carson Wentz. And ultimately, when Minnesota had an injury, they traded. And they got a first-round draft pick for him. And they end up kind of winning, you know, winning the day, if you will. That's the Bradford, which I don't think you can do with Indy because Wentz will, by most people's estimation, be back. And like I think we all view Wentz as a little emotionally, he has a fragile level of confidence. Like this is what his flaws are he's got a self-esteem, a quarterback self-esteem issue. It's like you want to grab him and say, Carson, you're good enough, you're smart enough, and gosh darn it, people like you. A crisis in confidence isn't help when you bring in Jimmy Garoppolo, even if it's because you've been banged up and you're always hurt. It definitely takes him out of the Nick Foles thing. They can't bring in Nick Foles. Can you imagine? You're Carson Wentz, you're like, again with this guy? No thanks. Doesn't matter how good of friends they are, how good Nick Foles is a great human being. He's going to be a pastor when he's done. Like, all that is great. It's still Nick Foles, the guy who won the Super Bowl while he sat there and watched his team win it. But to me, he's playing the best football of his life signifies they want to move him. But it's weird because do you want to move him when you could legitimately compete for and maybe win a Super Bowl? Like, look, if they have Nick Bosa on the defensive line, if they're healthy, that's a stacked group. That's a stacked group. And as much as Trey Lance checks a bunch of boxes, the idea that Trey Lance played one football game last year and never played consistently, wasn't playing high major D1 football, and he's going to come to the Niners and take them to the Super Bowl, nobody sees that. The Sam Bradford thing is the dream. The Alex Smith thing is the reality, right? Which is you hold on to him. You let him have this entire year. You make it about Garoppolo. You make him the quarterback. And you tell him, like, look, this is all an audition for next year's job somewhere else. But in the meantime, you're our quarterback. But it is weird when you start putting out the he's playing the best football of his life sort of thing. That is the somebody come make an offer sort of statement, right? As much as the Texans are an abject disaster with their Deshaun Watson thing, of course, you got a guy in the front office who drafted Jimmy Garoppolo. And as much as it doesn't feel like there's another team, right? There's Houston, all right, we can't do it. They got too many quarterbacks and they got to figure out the Deshaun thing. All right, Philly can't do it because they're waiting on Deshaun Watson. Okay, Indy can't do it because they don't want to hurt the fragile confidence of Carson Wentz. Those are three options. There'll be three more. Kyle Shanahan talking about 49ers QBs to Albert Breer. I think it's going to be tough for Lance to win the job, just in terms of being two different styles of quarterbacks and maybe different styles of offense for both. I'd be very surprised if we did the way Jimmy's playing. I put a lot of that on a kid to do that. He's doing everything he can. He's very impressed with him so far, but I'd be very surprised if that happened. John Lynch told this to Adam Schefter. Jimmy is a big-time competitor, and we haven't played a game yet, but in practice, in the offseason, and practice in training camp thus far, he's playing the best football since he's been here. Now here's the reality to going in, and I think some of you know this from playing in high school. Those of us who played in college know it. Right? And the same rings true in the pros. There's a lot of people that ask questions about, hey, Anthony Lynn, for example, last year. Okay. If you ask anybody around the Chargers now, they're like, how were we settling on Tyrod Taylor or Tyrod Taylor? Now, you have to keep in mind that Anthony Lynn had coached Tyrod Taylor in Buffalo when they went to the playoffs. And that Tyrod Taylor is a guy who never turns the ball over. And he was replacing Phillip Rivers, who became a turnover machine late in his career. But more than anything, Taylor knew the offense. Taylor knew what he was supposed to be doing. He Whereas it was completely and totally new. Okay, it's completely and totally new for a rookie quarterback. And so when you have, it's not just having sweat equity. When you just know what you're supposed to do and how you're supposed to do it and where the ball's supposed to go, it makes everything so much easier for you, you know? So when you sit there and you ask yourself, how could Justin Herbert sit behind Tyrod Taylor if not for, you know, the team doctor mistakenly injecting the lung of Tyrod Taylor, right? I mean, Justin Herbert is an absolute, looks like an absolute star. You go to Chargers practice, and if you're like me and you've been to their training camp the past 3 or 4 years, especially going back to when they had Philip Rivers, it's a different sport. There were just areas of the football field that Philip couldn't throw the ball to anymore. There are no areas of the football field when Justin Herbert can't throw the football to. He looks the part. He acts the part. He feels, how could they have missed? Well, look, Trey Lance is the same thing. Trey Lance checks a ton of boxes for what eventually the Niners quarterback's going to look like. But I can tell you this. It's different, but it's the same. My first year in college, I went to Notre Dame. I played for John McLeod. John McLeod was a long time, 18 years a head coach, I believe, in the NBA. And I was, promised. I was told I'd be the starting point guard. And I would tell you, 3 weeks into practice, I didn't think I could ever play college basketball. I was that bad. Because you think you've, like, you know, I played for an outstanding high school coach. I played for a high-level AU program. I played in every different all-star game. You know, I played at high level, whatever the highest level, and I played against college guys and pro guys in the summer, but I got there and they start setting real screens and running real offense and playing real defense, and I was completely lost. Completely lost. Part of it was they were running like a style of motion offense I had never run before. There was no traditional secondary break. I'd never played that way before. But more than anything, they were bigger, faster, stronger, but they knew what they were doing. And it took about a month before I kind of figured it out. And in all honesty, I got to play long before I should have. Why? Because the coaches saw what ultimately my ceiling was, which is what they all see with Trey Lance. They know ultimately Trey Lance is going to be the guy. It's just a mix of, do we let it organically happen on its own where Jimmy falls apart? Do we let it organically happen on its own where Jimmy plays out this year and then contractually talent wins over the locker room? It's a challenge. We know how it all ends, but how do they actually get to how it all ends? That's what I think is the fascinating part. We know Trey Lance is going to be the quarterback next year in San Francisco. But these next 12 months, what does that look like? I'm trying to read the tea leaves and trying to believe that John Lynch really thinks that Jimmy Garoppolo is a competitor and is capable of playing despite this intense pressure, a guy looking over his shoulder. But I've also lived on this earth long enough to not believe a word of what GMs tell anybody who's got a pen and a pad. Coming up next, how do you manage the situation with two quarterbacks? How do you manage having the next guy when you have a guy? Doug Whaley's been a general manager in the National Football League. He's managed just such a situation. We'll ask him next. I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is The Herd.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
I'm going to dedicate the next 15 seconds to Jersey Mike's new grilled portobello mushroom and Swiss sub. Delicious. You got to try it because fresh ingredients make it a sub above. Jersey Mike's, a sub above. I'm doing the head sideways thing from, what's that bit in Saturday Night Live, right? Night at the Roxbury. Okay. I can't stop doing it. All right, I'm stopping doing it. Doug Gottlieb for Colin. This is The Herd. Let's talk some football with a guy who's been a general manager in the National Football League. And he's been in the same situation as so many of these GMs where you have a young star quarterback who you drafted, who you put equity behind, and yet you have a guy who has more experience and probably looks better in camp in practice. Doug Whaley joins us here in The Herd on Fox Sports Radio. Doug, how are you?
Doug, I'm doing great. I mean, last week football started and you had the induction ceremony these last 2 days, and it just means every day's a holiday now that football season started.
Okay, so you're the general manager of the Buffalo Bills, and you draft E.J. Manuel, right?
Yeah, I was assistant GM, but I was okay. Part of that draft, absolutely.
Okay, so you guys draft E.J. Manuel. At the time, was Fitz still under that big contract there? What was the other situation for the rest of the quarterbacks on that team?
Yeah, Fitz was still under that contract, and we were really looking for somebody that would be the heir apparent and take us to that next level, as in a young guy that's going to be there for 10 to 15 years. And it was one of the things that the GM at the time, Buddy Nix, was there, and he just said before, and at the time, unbeknownst to me, he said, before I leave, I want to get a quarterback for the future of this organization. And after we drafted him, I think it was maybe a week later, he decided to hang him up, and then that's when I took over in 14 after the draft.
Okay, so truth be told, was EJ your pick as well? Did you, if you would have been able, like, obviously, we can go back and we could pick apart EJ's game. He's a brilliant human being. But would that have been your pick, or did Buddy make the final call?
Buddy made the final call. But the way we set it up, he would have been our pick, or if I was the GM, my pick, but probably not in the first round. Buddy was just so adamant about getting him. It was his guy, and he wanted to remove all doubt. And that's one of those things, especially with the rookie salary cap now, you can overdraft quarterbacks, especially in the first round, because it's not going to be such a burden on your cap as before, that like it was before when they didn't have that rookie salary cap. So if you like a guy, especially at that quarterback, you want to remove all doubt, so you're not kicking yourself saying, I wish we would have.
Okay, so how do you go about, you want him to be the starter, but you know he's not ready. Like, how do you go about that in terms of allowing there's some competition, but also allowing the guy that you want to assume the job?
Well, what you do is you have competition, and that's one of the things, but you structure it in a way that the guy doesn't get overwhelmed. You want him to come in and be able to assimilate to being a professional. And it's just like going from high school to college, and you did it too, Doug. There's that transition period, and some guys can take that transition and run with it day one, and other guys, it's going to take some time for them to assimilate, and especially at that quarterback position. You don't want to overburden them too quickly until you see them respond. And if they respond in a very mature way, then you let the reins off and say, go get it. And there's some guys that have done it, and they've done it to a high level. And there's other guys that have taken some time. And that's what I always say about Mahomes. He is an incredible talent, and everybody saw the ceiling that he could reach to. We, especially in Buffalo, weren't sure how long it would take him to get there. And the situation he came into in Kansas City, I thought, is the main reason why he's as good as he is, as quickly as he is. If he goes to another situation, is he the Mahomes that's been to two Super Bowls and won one already at this time in his career? I don't know. I would probably say no. But because he went into that right situation and they had a plan for him, it just shows that that's – and it's a case-by-case basis, but they did a great job with him.
No, it's a great point, because I've defended the Bears. I have some friends in the Bears organization, and they kind of told me, like, look, it's the same thing. Like, we like Mahomes. We thought he had a higher ceiling than Mitchell Trubisky, but we also were worried about the floor. And, you know, Trubisky seemed like a better kind of rah-rah leader, whereas, remember, they're replacing a guy in Jay Cutler who everybody hated, right? The players just didn't like Jay Cutler, right? So you got to bring a guy that everybody loves. And not that people don't love Mahomes, but he's a very laid-back personality, especially early on when he first... Who you're seeing now in a Pat Mahomes was not who he was coming out of the draft. And that's a really hard thing to... How does a guy assimilate to the NFL? Does being a star go to his head? You know, these are hard things to judge, but I would agree with you, is that We have no idea what Pat Mahomes would look like had he been drafted by anybody other than the Kansas City Chiefs.
No doubt about it. And you got to look at it, too. You hit something that a lot of people don't think about. Look at how he is a leader off the field now. What he's done with the social awareness and the social justice and how he's ingratiated himself in the community. And he's just a big a leader, or strong a leader, off the field in his community and in the country, and taking that mantle of being the face of the NFL.
Yeah.
That's a burden that a lot of people can't bear. Add to the fact the pressures that come with being a starting quarterback and a first round pick that they gave up a lot of draft capital to go up and get. So that's a lot of pressure for him to shoulder it, and not only shoulder it, but thrive. I told you that's a special human being, but they had a special plan for him, and his support system has to be very, very successful. And they have and shown that they got the right team around them.
Doug Whaley joining us here. Doug Gottlieb for calling us The Herd. What people don't know about Doug is before he was the general manager and assistant general manager, he was a scout with the Pittsburgh Steelers. I believe, you tell me if I'm wrong, you're one of the guys credited for saying, hey, we need to go get Troy Polamalu. Take me back to Troy Polamalu. When you saw him in college, and then yesterday we see him officially become a Hall of Famer, what you remember the first time you saw Troy play?
The essence of being a scout is to paint a picture of a player that someone hasn't seen in person before in the shortest amount of time possible. And he is the only player in my 20-plus years of evaluating talent where when I was sitting and writing a report, I didn't know what to write. And you're saying, how does that? Because he was such a unique skill set that he wasn't an explosive hitter, but he made tackles. He wasn't a great cover guy, but he always found a way to intercept the ball. He was just the ultimate playmaker. So I came back and I was talking to my boss at the time, Kevin Colburn, and he says, hey, you went out and saw Troy. What do you think of him? I said, I don't know how to explain this guy, but he's just, you got to take him. He will be a great player. And he goes, I looked at him. I explain him like water. And I go, what do you mean that? He goes, wherever he needs to be, he'll be there. If you pour a bottle of water, that water is going to find that crevice, that crack, or wherever it needs to be. He's going to be there and make plays. And I said, that's it. He's like water. It was the strangest thing. You knew what you liked about him, and you knew he was a great football player, and he had a high ceiling. It was just hard to put in words because it was such a unique skill set, and you just couldn't peg him into, oh, he's a hard-hitting safety. He's a free safety ball hawk. He was just everything.
What was the draft night? I don't know. Were you in the room during draft night? What, like, this is 2003. For people who forget, 2003, Carson Palmer went 1. Charles Rogers went 2, right? Andre Johnson, 3. Terrell Suggs went 10, right? Marcus Trufant was the first defensive back off the board. At 16, you're sitting there, and, you know, Calvin Pace is available. There's some other. Willis McGahee is available. Of course, he had the knee injury. Larry Johnson, the running back's available. Nnamdi Asmawai was available. What do you remember about that draft night 2003?
We just remember that all those guys were available, but where we were and where our defense was at that time with Pittsburgh, we thought we needed a playmaking safety. And it was one of those things that Pittsburgh very rarely trades up in the first round. So it was a little consternation that, hey, should we do something out of character? But to a man in that room, it was, if you're going to do it for somebody, do it for a guy like this. Because, and you saw it with his acceptance speech, as good as a player he is on the field, he's a better man off the field. So that he embodied what, again, like you said, the Steeler way and the Steeler culture, he checked all the boxes, hit all the marks. So we're going to say, we're going to do it. We're going to do it for this guy. And at that time, it was a no-brainer. And we were just hoping no one ahead of us was going to take him and saw what we saw in him. So it was one of those where before the day or two before the draft, we were on the phone talking to people ahead of us saying, would you be interested in coming up or going down? Or what are you thinking about in this draft day? So we targeted a couple teams that they were saying, hey, give us a call 2 or 3 picks before our pick. And if our guy's either gone or we feel we can move back and there's a guy maybe in your position that we can get, we'll be able to make the deal. So a lot of the framework was tentatively discussed before that day, but that day it was some anxious moments, but it obviously turned out to be a Hall of Fame moment.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's an incredible, incredible football player, and he's a playmaker, right? There was no real definable way in which you just had to watch him. You had to watch him to get it, and if you watch the football game, he jumped off the screen, both literally and figuratively. Doug Whaley joining us here in the herd. Doug Gottlieb filling in for Colin. Okay, so now we look at current quarterback situations. You got Jimmy Garoppolo, who's taken them to a Super Bowl. They led in the second half. Now, he missed on some throws, but when he's been healthy, they've been a playoff team. They've been a Super Bowl team. But they move mountains to get Trey Lance. He's different. He only played one game last year because of COVID. But obviously, super high ceiling. What are your thoughts on how the Niners should handle this situation?
I think you look at it as if you're a pool player, you're always looking to make that first shot, but you're also trying to lead that ball so you can set yourself up for the second shot. And they're playing pool with this decision because, like you said, Jimmy Garoppolo is a productive winning quarterback in the league. His biggest issue is health, availability. So what you do is you take a young guy knowing at some point we will not be able to depend on this player, this quarterback, for the long run. But as he's playing now, let's bring in somebody that's young, that has all the talent in the world, help him learn behind Jimmy Garoppolo, that learn behind Tom Brady. Let them learn the trade. Let them learn how to be professionals, how to assimilate to the pro game, especially where he's coming from. He basically had one game last year that he played, so he lost that year. He was in 1AA or championship level. So he's got to make a couple strides, not just steps, some strides to be able to perform at a high level. Why not put him behind a guy like Jimmy Garoppolo? And, oh, well, if Jimmy gets hurt this year, we still have this guy to come in and be able, you'll accelerate his time frame, but he will be able to at least learn from day one how to be a pro and how to be a quarterback in this league from a guy that's done it at a high level. Like you said, he's been no Super Bowl before.
I want to ask you about Josh Allen, who obviously has helped take the Bills. They went to the playoffs with Tyrod Taylor, and he's continued kind of that upward trajectory. They gave him a massive deal, $150 million guaranteed. And did it before they necessarily had to. Do you like, philosophically, do you like the idea of paying a guy maybe before you have to?
I look at it this way. If you wait around and then you have, he blows it up another year, then the price just goes up. Then you start looking at like a Kirk Cousins type deal where you got to play that franchise tag deal 2 years in a row. And it just creates an air in that locker room of saying, what do I have to do to get paid by this organization? If the quarterback that's performed at a high level 2 years in a row, 3 years in a row, and they're not bending over backwards to give him security and be the face of that franchise for the rest of his career, what else do I have to do? So you got to be careful about the message it sends in that locker room. And I think doing it a year early sends a great message. It shows Josh, I have security, and I don't have to have this constant nagging by the press over my head of what about the conversation, what about the contract. And then that message it sends in the locker room is just, it's worth probably what they paid him. Because if you look at the numbers, when you look at it, it's not going to be until year 8 that Mahomes actually makes more money than him cumulative. I think year 8, Mahomes will be made $285 million, and Allen will make $284 million. So, and think about it. Mahomes has been to two Super Bowls and won one. So it's a great deal for Josh and for Bills that they may have overpaid, but they got their guy.
Yes. I mean, I hear all of that. But the difference in this and a Kirk Cousins and a Dak Prescott is those guys were fourth-round picks, so they weren't making anything. There wasn't the fifth year where you have the huge kind of contract bump, right? Like it is different than those situations. And in truth, like you had this year, next year, and then two or three franchise, like you did have time on your side. I get that you want cost certainty. I get that you're like, this is our guy. But that's what they did with Goff, and it felt like the second they signed that Goff deal, they had remorse.
Well, that just shows you that how subjective and how hard it is to evaluate talent and be correct on talent in the NFL. Because the most unpredictable specimens on this earth are humans. So you got Goff. He looks great. You give him a bunch of money. For some reason, things go south. Who knows? Was it a bad fit with McVay and he goes to somewhere else and it's going to be, you don't know. But I think, in my opinion, especially with the way he has constantly improved, this is, I'm not going to argue and say it was a year too early. They could have waited a year. Absolutely. I could see that. But if this is your guy, don't be afraid to make that move and make that deal and get it. And then you take the pressure off of everybody. And then they can focus on taking that next step and closing that gap to Kansas City instead of every single moment. What about Josh's contract? What about Josh's contract? And then also you set the market. So if the number one pick, Baker Mayfield, signs before you, then Josh has a better year than Baker, then that's going to elevate that price. So what I think they're doing was pay a little bit more now than to pay a lot more later if you wait.
Last thing, I went to Ram. I was at Rams camp on Wednesday, and the raving about Matt Stafford, like, look, this guy, he has the experience, he has the arm, he can make every throw, he's more mobile than people understand. Are you a buyer into that this is a massive upgrade for the Rams?
I am not. I'm not. I mean, everybody's going to put the blame on Detroit and what they had, or lack of weapons and team around Matthew Stafford. I just think he's a very talented person, very talented quarterback. But there's a difference between being talented and being a winner. When you look at it, Tom Brady, his talent is not in his physical talent. It's right in his ability to win, to never say die, and to take it, his game, to the next level and elevate everybody else's game. And Matthew's never done that. Stafford has never elevated the teams around him to get them to win a playoff game. And this is what year is this? 9-10 for him? A leopard, after a while, especially in that quarter, in that position, that's hard for him to change his stripes. So I could see him, in my opinion, they got that number one defense. If that comes back, Sean McVay, if he lives up to that offensive guru status that he's been lamented with, I could see him maybe winning his first playoff game. I just don't see it right now of him changing his stripes that much that take them to the promised land of where they want to go.
Doug, it's always great to catch up with you. You always give us deep, thoughtful, honest opinions. And I love that you got to see your guy, Troy Polamalu, get inducted in the Pro Football Hall of Fame yesterday. Thanks for being our guest on Fox Sports Radio.
Always a pleasure. Okay.
Pleasure's all mine. That's Doug Whaley, former general manager of the Buffalo Bills. Used to be in the XFL as well with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Let's get to Ryan Music with the news.
No. Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Man, some great behind-the-scenes stories there with Doug Whaley. Always great to have him on the show. All right, we will keep it rolling here in the NFL, Doug, and we're going to go to the NFC West, where you just were talking about the Rams, but we're going to talk about the Seattle Seahawks.
Saw this story.
Yeah, left tackle Dwayne Brown is entering the final year of his contract, set to pay a little over $11 million. He will be 36 later this month, and he is in his 14th season in the league. But he wants more of a commitment, so he's doing a bit of a holdout right now, or I guess the new term is hold in.
Hold in, yes.
Where they show up for training camp so they can't be fined, but then they actually don't really participate in any of the drills or workouts. Well, Russell Wilson, who was unhappy with the Seattle front office earlier this offseason, and we know how all that drama played out, spoke out about Dwayne Brown and his little holdout, hold-in contract status, and he thinks it's time for Seattle to give Brown another contract. Quote, "Not having Dwayne Brown out there is a pretty significant deal because I think he's one of the best left tackles in the game, and there's no arguing it." And then he goes on to say he's really exceptional, so smart. I think people fear him. And to be honest with you, they're rushing him and playing against him. So definitely want to be able to get him back out there. We got to figure this out because we need Dwayne Brown.
Yeah, I mean, like, look, they're holding Seattle hostage. And I would say, you know, to Seattle's, in Seattle's defense, right, he's going to make $14 million this year. And so he's going to be compensated. It's just the last year of his deal. And he doesn't want to go out there without, you know, but he's 36. So how long are we supposed to extend you, which is reasonable, at your position, at your skill set? So there's, like, would we redo your deal? Absolutely. But would we redo your deal and kick you back at the same level for three or four more years? Probably not, because anybody has a drop-off age. Right? This is not Tom Brady where you can stand back there as a statue.
Right.
At tackle, there's a level of athleticism. Your body breaks down. You lose a step. And all of a sudden, your quarterback gets killed. It is interesting, though, that, you know, Russell Wilson goes from kind of crushing his offensive line, saying, I'm tired of getting hit, to defending his offensive line, saying, we got to pay this guy.
Well, I mean, you know, everything's all fine and good now. That's why, Doug, you don't have to worry about trashing your offensive linemen and how much you're getting hit if everything's good as you prepare for the season. Now it's, you know, we're all boys forever and for always. So
I feel like NFL teams do have a tendency to get a bad rap, right? Where, well, you know, they don't pay you the full amount of your contract. Like, that's not true. This is the fourth year of his deal. When he got there, he got an extension. They're going to pay him every penny. And if he plays well, he gets a new contract next year. The holding out in the last year, like, do you want to get ahead of it? Sure. This is never a good time to negotiate on the fly.
Yeah. And we'll wrap things up with this, Doug. Cowboys quarterback Dak Prescott. We know he's coming off that significant leg injury that ended his season last year, but all things seem to be going well with that. What doesn't seem to be going so well is this injury he has to his throwing shoulder. Head coach Mike McCarthy said he's done some light throwing for the first time since he had to leave practice back on July 28th due to a strain. He said he's been throwing some light objects, which could perhaps be adding some clarity that he may not be throwing an actually full-size regulation football just yet. He will be returning to practice based on how his progression goes. But he said, once again, this is us more than him. This is us being cautious, so we feel really good about where he is.
Well, there's also reports over the weekend he's made dramatic improvements. My guess would be, here's a guy who didn't get a chance to play much of last year after the broken leg. He comes out, he overdoes it, right? And he throws too much, and now he's got a strained arm. It's not necessarily a camp arm, but he did hurt himself. Does it make you hold your breath if you're the Cowboys and you went all in for 4 years with Dak Prescott and you don't know if he'll be ready for week one of the season? Sure. But it's also reasonable to understand we're a month away from his first game of the season. And that's Ryan Music with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
Okay, I thought the one issue I have with the Pro Football Hall of Fame, they over-addressed and they overcorrected, and now we have to overcorrect back. But it's because of, well, this underlying issue with all Hall of Fames. We'll get to that next in The Herd.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Hey, it's Ben, host of The Fifth Hour with Ben Maller, along with my trusty sidekick, David Gascon. Would mean a lot to have you join us on our weekly auditory journey. You're asking, what in God's name is The Fifth Hour? I'll tell you, it's a spinoff of The Ben Maller Show, a cult hit overnights on FSR. Why should you listen? Picture, if you will, a world where we chat with captains of industry in media, sports, and more every week. Explore some amazing facts about human nature and more. Listen to The Fifth Hour with Ben Maller on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
Doug Gottlieb in for Colin. This is The Herd, Fox Sports Radio, the iHeartRadio app. Things I don't usually do. I don't usually watch All-Star games, you know? It's not real basketball. I don't usually watch the Hall of Fame induction ceremonies. Now, I did watch this year basketball because my college coach was inducted and Kobe Bryant was inducted. But the NFL ones have a tendency to drag on and on and on and on. Well, because they had two classes, you know, they had the 2020 and the 2021, they tightened it up. They gave them 6 minutes to talk, which less is more. Unfortunately, you want to hear more from Peyton Manning This was Manning joking about his time limit.
I want to give a special thanks to my old rival, Ray Lewis, for being here tonight. Ray just finished giving his speech that he started in 2018. And speaking of rivals, my good friend Tom Brady is here tonight. By the time he is inducted, By the time Tom Brady is inducted in his first year of eligibility in the year 2035, he'll only have time to post his acceptance speech on his Instagram account.
So here's what's really at issue, okay? And I do think the Pro Football Hall of Fame does a great job. Dave Baker's running it. Of course, if you know any, you know about Big Dave Baker, he's this gigantic hearted man who's literally a gigantic human being. I've known him, 35 years. I went to the same high school. His sons went to my high school as well. And like Big Dave Baker has taken the Pro Football Hall of Fame to a higher and better level. And cutting down the speech time is paramount in terms of the watchability. They've just been too long. But one of the issues is like, look, I want to hear Peyton Manning speak longer. Right? And I'm respectful of other Hall of Famers, but there's a difference between Peyton Manning and many of the other Hall of Famers, which only speaks to, you know what the big issue in the Hall of Famers is? We have some really, 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 really good. And then we have some Hall of Famers. Like, did Isaac Bruce, who got in, did he belong in? Of course he did. Isaac Bruce, if you grew up watching the Rams in Southern California, then in St. Louis, when they're the greatest show on turf, like, Bruce, yes. I mean, based upon other wide receivers who've gotten in, he belongs in. But can you ever put him at the level of a Peyton Manning in terms of superstar? No, that's because Peyton Manning is in the true Hall of Famers, it's Peyton Manning. Unfortunately, we can't go, hey, Isaac Bruce will give you 6 minutes, we'll give Peyton Manning 36 minutes, right? Which is probably what we should do. Or one's a Hall of Famer and one's not. Is Josh Allen closer to Pat Mahomes or Jared Goff? We'll make you think about it next in The Hurt.